Prime Minister is big on raising energy levels, but it's unlikely this is what he had in mind.
A lot of people already got other jobs lined up, but there's a lot of tears.
You know, change the product or better hedging with the power pricing, I don't know. There's got to be ways around it, but here we are today, unfortunately.
Kia ora, ko Russell Palmer aho. Ane te pūrongo tōranga pū mō tēnei wiki. Welcome to Focus on Politics. Tough times for the central North Island. Two mills, one for paper in Karioi, the other for wood pulp in Tangiwai, confirmed on Tuesday their plans to shut down for good. It leaves at least 230 employees out of work. Electrician Charles has worked there for 25 years.
It's devastating. There's a wider community for the mill. There's all the logging trucks and there's contractors. There's all the services that come with it. You know, all those people have to find work.
The main problem is power. A shortage of rain keeping lake levels low stunts hydroelectric generation and causes wholesale energy prices to spike. In August, prices were among the highest in the Western world, threatening to make industries that rely heavily on electricity uneconomic. Charles's son, Leonardo, has been an operator at the mill for 2 years. Now, he's eyeing up Australia.
You've got to do what you've got to do. I'd rather he did stay in New Zealand rather than jump the ditch, like a lot of people are apparently doing.
The mill's operator, Winstone Pulp International, paused production last month to consult with the unions about permanent closure. The region's mayors happened to be in Wellington for the local government conference and quickly set up a meeting with ministers. I asked Taupō Mayor David Truavis about it that night.
Ruapehu District, Whakapapa, Chateau, Winstone Pulp, you know, it's over 50% of their GDP out the door, so we've got to do something.
Got to do something. So it sounds like they're making promising noises?
They certainly know the issues and know the situation. We've got Winstone Pulp dealing direct with the Prime Minister and Shane Jones now, so giving them the actual figures of what's happened and what they contribute to the community and all that sort of thing.
Do they give you the kind of indication of exactly what they might do or the approach that they might take?
They promise to have a look at it. Have a look at it and analyse it, put it to their people and come back to us. So, you know, I'm a neighbouring council, so a lot of flow on the transport companies. Mark McCarthy's got 80 trucks there sitting there. We've got Brian Smith and Taupō. They've got a similar number of trucks that feed into this factory out the door. And, you know, they might talk about mothballing it, but once the sawmill is closed, it takes too long, too expensive to open up again. So basically, once they make the decision, it's all over.
The ministers went away and hatched a plan to be announced by the Energy Minister, Simeon Brown, the following week. The trouble was the timeframes.
In terms of the short term, what we've seen is Tiwai has reduced its demand, Methanex has shifted its gas temporarily into electricity production, and we've also seen Transpower allow for that contingent resource to be brought forward. All of that's led to lower prices, more stable prices, but they're still too high.
The first thing the government's doing is a review of the energy system. They will also allow more water to be drawn from hydro lakes by next winter and enable the construction of a liquid natural gas import facility by the end of 2026.
Ultimately, we need the gas to be able to firm intermittent electricity renewable sources such as wind, solar, and hydro. That's the critical feature here.
The coalition is all gassed up about that ban on oil and gas exploration. The Prime Minister says it's had a chilling effect on the industry.
Previous government's ban on oil and gas exploration threatened investment in the upstream energy sector. And as good as it may have sounded on a bumper sticker or to climate activists in Europe, it was reckless and counterproductive.
Ending it is perhaps the government's fastest action, with legislation to be passed by the end of next year. The move certainly has its fans, like New Plymouth Mayor Neil Holdham.
Unless Labor are prepared to come and work with National on a bipartisan energy policy, we can just expect over the next 3 or 4 years all of the major energy-intensive industries in New Zealand to slowly close down, and we'll be replacing the gas that we're not finding with coal. Genesis has ordered 350,000 tonnes worth of coal, which is a football field stacked 50 metres tall, to get us through next winter.
But it's hard to say when or even if that will start fueling New Zealand's power supplies. Labour's Chris Hipkins is adamant there's another solution.
We've got plenty of renewable electricity generation. We could have a very low base price for electricity in New Zealand if we built all the renewable electricity generation that's already been consented.
Others blame the gentailers, power generation companies that also sell their electricity, who in 2022 made up about 84% of the market. Critics include Associate Energy Minister Shane Jones.
Of course they're profiteering.
The economist Jeff Bertram agrees, but also points the finger at the politicians.
The gentailers, the Electricity Authority and Transpower, between them have systematically blocked access for decentralised distributed generation on rooftops, small-scale solar and all of that sort of thing. They've blocked the new wind from coming in by sitting on undeveloped wind sites. They've basically systematically erected barriers to entry to this market, and they themselves have not invested for the last decade while they paid out huge dividends. Now, that's a mix that has produced a toxic situation right now, but the blame goes back not just to the gentailers. They're just doing what they're supposed to do, make a bundle of profit. The blame goes back to Parliament, which legislated this stuff, and governments which have systematically over the years failed to fix it.
He told Morning Report's Corin Dann the gentailers are operating as a cartel. He says the government did have a chance to fix the problem back in the 90s by putting in long-term contracts like the one Rio Tinto secured. The company's aluminium smelter at Tiwai Point near Bluff employs or indirectly supports more than 3,200 people and uses about 13% of New Zealand's power. It had been at risk of closing for years, but in May signed a 20-year deal with gentailers Meridian, Contact and Mercury.
I was one of those who, back in 1991, were urging the government to do that. They chose not to. At any stage in the subsequent few decades, while they owned the generators outright, they could have put those contracts in place. They did not do so.
Mercury's general manager in charge of development, Phil Gibson, says uncertainty over the previous government's Lake Onslow battery project and Tiwai Point's future also kept the gentailers from developing renewable energy plans they already had consents for.
Those two things together, which constitute about 30% of the nation's energy demand, so 15% of introduced energy and 15% of removed energy. So the uncertainty that provides to investment, your investment is not needed if either of those two things happen.
The coalition ended the work on Lake Onslow, and with Tiwai's future secured, construction on those renewable consents should start soon. The government's speeding up new consents too, with its fast-track bill. But it feels a bit too little too late for those mill workers, like Daniel Abernathy.
Yeah, well, I've been here 11 years, I think it is now. I thought this was going to be my last job, basically. This is where I was going to retire. We never thought it would come to this. Families in Taiapu, we've set up our life here, so I'll just have to find work in the area.
He has some words for the government.
I was looking at the news a couple of nights ago, and Christopher Luxon was on there, and he was talking about being in Malaysia and trying to encourage Malaysian businesses to come and invest. We are a Malaysian-owned company. You're not prepared to invest. How are you going to get other ones to come if you're not looking after the ones we've actually got here working?
Social Development Minister Louise Upston says it's not just power prices to blame.
The unfortunate reality is we are in economic times that are seeing a number of businesses close.
She told Morning Report a short-term funding boost would be of little help. She's deployed MSD to help those looking for work.
They have a range of employers on their books that are keen to employ. So I accept that it's challenging. It may mean for some people needing to relocate, but MSD will be working incredibly hard with those affected.
But for all the government's plans, it's stayed well away from what Shane Jones has wanted for decades. Direct market intervention, splitting up the gentailers.
I would have done that 3 years ago had I had the opportunity. The party I come from has always wanted to do that.
It's what opposition parties want too.
I think the government absolutely needs to intervene to make sure the electricity market is competitive.
But the electricity and energy companies have been getting away with this stuff for years. What we need to be doing is focusing on people and planet.
The Electricity Authority is meant to provide oversight of the market. Minister Jones has called them as ineffective as a chocolate teapot. Chief Executive Sarah Gillies insists it has been doing its job.
What we've seen in the last little while has been a challenging time driven by a fuel shortage, a decline in gas availability and a drop-off in water into our hydro lakes, a very dry sequence. And at times like that, you do see high wholesale electricity prices. We do have done a lot of work in this last little while to help address that immediate issue of the price spike, And we've also got this longer term work about evolving the market for the future, which we're accelerating given how quickly things are changing.
But we know that the dry year problem has been around for a long time. There's been a lack of gas exploration for quite some time. These haven't been new problems that have just popped up. Wasn't there planning done to ensure that those wouldn't become the problems that escalated into what we saw this winter?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of good work across the industry in dealing with these sorts of things, and particularly if you think about a dry year, there's a very well-established kind of process to deal with that kind of situation. But we had a situation where we had a very dry sequence, one of the driest that there's been, combined with this gas problem. You've seen, you know, the market response, and as I said, wholesale electricity prices have dropped considerably. You know, this evolution of the market, how the market needs to change, is exactly what we're working on, and as I said, we're accelerating that work.
So the market needs to change now, but it didn't need to change before?
Well, the market needs to evolve, and that's work that we've had underway for the last little while, and we're accelerating.
The last little while being?
Well, the Market Development Advisory Group wrote us a report published in December last year, and off the back of that, there's 31 recommendations about how to evolve the market. That's what we've been working on, and some of that is what we're particularly accelerating.
Does the EA need more tools?
We have got good tools, but there are some things that we are specifically thinking about that would be useful for us to support our ability to do our job.
What would those be?
I don't want to get into too many specifics about that.
She says there are four new measures being brought in as part of the authority's work with the Commerce Commission. These include a firming of power purchase agreements, which give more certainty to developers looking at building wind or solar. The second measure is broadening access to a kind of insurance called standardised flexibility products. And then there's two regulatory backstops.
So one of them was a recommendation of the Market Development Advisory Group. It's called preparing for virtual disaggregation of the flexible generation base, but essentially it would design rules to make sure that the gentailers offer a minimum volume of their flexible generation base in the form of risk management contracts, and that would be a backstop if we don't see what we want to see.
Right. And the last one?
Yeah, so the last one is, we would sort of describe it as investigating level playing field measures so that if you don't see the competition that you need, we would know what sort of measures we would want to bring in, the risks of them, the possible triggers at the point at which you'd say it's time to put this sort of measure in. Essentially, they would be there as a backstop.
Right, and that's still being worked on, is it?
That's right, yeah. So that's being worked on by the task force, and we'll obviously be able to talk more about the work that the task force is doing soon.
But Jeff Bertram, the economist, thinks there needs to be more focus on rooftop solar panels.
This is the time to take a really deep breath and set about fixing the market structure. One of the things that will mean is that we open the way for new competitors to come into generation, and that means, above all, ordinary New Zealanders able to put solar in their roofs at an affordable price.
Power prices have come down again, for now, and the authority is seeing signs of more generation coming online.
What's important with profits is, are those profits being reinvested? Some of the other work we've done has been to publish information about the generation investment that's coming to market so that people can see, you know, what new generation's coming, when is it coming. And one of the things that's been really great to see from that is about a third of the new generation is coming from newcomers, which is great.
So that suggests that the gentailers themselves haven't historically been investing?
There's been a period where there hasn't been, over the last few years, where there wasn't as much investment as we're now seeing coming to market. And there's been a number of factors at play in that. One of the things that's really important to understand is that what we're dealing with is more demand for electricity. And with more demand, we need more supply. And so more supply coming to market is partly responding to that increasing demand.
Who are these newcomers?
Oh, there's a range of them. If it's useful, we can get you a list, but Harmony, Helios, Lodestone, so there's quite a lot of solar, yeah.
So are they just generators or are they generator retailers?
Yeah, so no, some of these are new generator only, so independent generators. There's quite a lot of independent generators.
I guess what I'm asking is the gentailer model the most appropriate one, or might there need to be a change in future?
Look, I think what's important from our perspective is seeing that generation coming to market, and that's why we've got both a dashboard that helps monitor that, but also this task force and some of the other work we're doing, which is really designed to accelerate and make sure that we're getting that new investment in generation to match the increasing demand.
I asked the Energy Minister, Simeon Brown, if he still has confidence in the authority.
We're working very closely with them. They've got the task force with the ComCom around ensuring we have a competitive market. They've set up a power price task force to help do that, and they're working at pace to make changes so that the market is more competitive.
The question is whether what's been put in motion will be enough. Enough to stall what some say could be a domino chain of manufacturing closures, enough to protect New Zealanders from future price shocks. Or will more action from this government, or the next, be needed? That was Focus on Politics. I'm Russell Palmer. Thank you for joining us. Mā te wā.